The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show here on Highland Radio. And we're here with you for the next 2 hours and we've got so much to squeeze in. So please stick around, you won't be disappointed. And get involved in the conversation, your views, your opinions, critical. 086 60 25 000, that's the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 60 25 000. Or you can give us a call on 07491 25 000. Or if you prefer, comments@highlandradio.com, that's your email. So if you're listening to the podcast, available on our website, but you can subscribe on Spotify as well. And also the Greg Hughes podcast is populated in there as well. Feel free to text or comment whenever you're listening. We can pick them up and carry them through into the next live show. Let's start with a look at the papers. The Finn Valley Voice this morning. Donegal County Council has been given the go-ahead to proceed with a compulsory purchase order, CPO, to develop land in Ballybuffet into a new two-storey car park as part of the 9 million seed town centre regeneration project. The decision follows a review of objections to the CPO in an oral hearing held in October 2025. After considering all submissions, the order has now been confirmed with some minor changes, allowing the council to move ahead with those plans. On to the Nationals now. And I was interested in this survey because we often talk on this programme, but amongst ourselves out and about the wealth in the country and the fact that, you know, the country is so wealthy. I'm sorry to sound like I'm repeating myself, but then you hear statistics about billions of euro being in savings. And I've tried to reference in the past what appears to be a two or three tier Ireland. And I believe it's a three tier Ireland. And these statistics seem to back it up. So whilst it's fantastic that loads of people can afford to get new cars and have luxury holidays and all that kind of stuff, it's fantastic. These people work very, very hard for the money. Then there's another group of individuals that just get by. But then there's another group of individuals, at least, that are struggling all of the time. There is a lot of, and it seems primarily older people. This is just in terms of contacts that I've had. There's a lot of older people out there who are very much struggling to pay their electricity bills. They're doing it in part payments. They're doing it as you go. It's a real issue. And I would love to get a sense of that so everybody understands that there's an awful lot of people genuinely in that situation. But anyway, this survey shows that nearly a third of people have less than 1,000 euro in savings, while one in nine have no savings at all, new research shows. However, more than half, 58% of people, have more than 2,000 in savings, with the cash earning very little, as 150 billion euro is sitting in low-yielding accounts offering an average interest rate of a paltry 0.2%. The results of the survey were described as stark, with 30% of adults in Ireland having less than 1,000 euro in savings and 11% nothing at all. What that means, if you have a major incident at home, a boiler goes, washing machine, car breaks down, a third of people really don't have the resources or just about have the resources to meet the demands of that crisis. So that is the tiers of society in this country. Also, too, yesterday we were talking about CyberSafe Kids, and it was also sort of stated on the programme, and I kind of went along with it, that restricting phones for younger people is the way forward. But just interestingly, today a survey has been published, and it's in the Irish Independent, that restrictive smartphone policies in schools make little difference to pupils' quality of life or mental health well-being. This according to a new analysis. It comes as many schools in Ireland are curbing phone use or imposing an outright ban for various reasons, including concerns about concentration, mental health and cyberbullying. However, a survey by researchers from the University of Birmingham was published today in BMG Mental Health. It set out to examine if these policies made any difference. In schools with restrictive policies, phones weren't allowed to be used during the school day for recreational purposes and had to be turned off and inside bags or stored in lockers or kept in a pouch or handed into school reception or not allowed onto the premises. In permissive schools, phones were allowed to be used at any time or at certain times, such as during breaks or lunch and or in certain zones outside, for example. Well, complete survey data was collected from 815 pupils aged 12 to 15 from 20 schools, 13 restrictive, 7 permissive, 36 teachers and 20 senior members of staff responsible for the school's smartphone policy. And the online questionnaire was, well, it doesn't matter when it was conducted. The analysis revealed that the difference in pupils' quality of life and mental well-being between restrictive and permissive schools was minimal. So there you go. Not saying that throws that whole notion out the window, but not everything that you do may have the impact that you believe it is having. The Irish Times, the Department of Education will consider changing a guidance for schools on LGBTQI plus issues, including the use of pronouns for trans students, once a review of its existing guidance is completed in the coming months. So there's been much debate over the guidance from schools or being given to schools, i.e. being given to teachers, and what they must or must not do. A current resource for schools, a document produced by the Gay and Lesbian Equality Network entitled Being LGBT in School, is being independently reviewed. It's intended that an updated resource in line with the best practice will be issued in schools once the review is complete, the department said. According to a spokesperson, it is not making any assumptions on the outcome of the review, but will consider the review once it's done and will take appropriate next steps. So the guidance is that you must use a child's preferred pronouns. That's obviously been questioned legally, whether or not a teacher must do that or not. And I presume this guidance will come out and offer some clarity in relation to that. We're going to be covering, obviously, the cancellation of cancer flights, which I think is what it is, effectively, in a moment. An air route between Dublin and Donegal will be kept under weekly review, the Transport Minister has said, amid concerns about impact on cancer treatments. This is the Irish Star. Donegal Cancer Flights and Services has expressed concerns that changes to the public service obligation route will cut off a medical lifeline. And I said to Gooch a little earlier on that I was struggling to sleep last night. So I got the phone out and I jotted down a few thoughts in relation to this. And it was triggered by a headline I read on RTE. I'll just say it was RTE. This is nothing against the journalists or what have you. And then I was listening to a line of questioning to Mary Ward this morning on the radio, which effectively was, sure, there's a flight in the morning, there's a flight in the evening, would that not do you? And as I say, the journalists often are based in Dublin, and I get that. But just to this headline, and it just made me think, if you don't mind, and this is just me opining here, this is nothing to do with Highland Radio, this is just my own thoughts about this issue and just sort of wider issues that face us, if you'll indulge me. So, of course, there's been criticism here in Donegal on the decision by government to proceed with a new Donegal to Dublin public service obligation flight that removes afternoon flights in favour of a new schedule. So the headline nationally is there's been criticism in the northwest of the government's decision to proceed with a new Donegal to Dublin public service obligation flight contract that removes afternoon flights in favour of a new schedule. So I wanted to look at that headline from our state broadcaster RTE regarding the new PSO flight contract between Donegal and Dublin. The headline tells us that the government is proceeding with a contract, and that removes afternoon flights in favour of a new schedule. It mentions that there's been criticism in the northwest. So listen to those words, proceeding in favour of criticism. It's the language of a board meeting. It's clinical, it's detached, and it's profoundly othering, us being the ones that are othered. So when you strip the humanity out of a sentence, you insulate the rest of the country from the reality of what's actually happening here. So let's run a thought experiment. So imagine St. James Hospital in or Beaumont in Dublin announced they were closing their oncology wards every afternoon to optimise the new schedule. So this is just imagining St. James in Beaumont or Beaumont in Dublin announcing they were closing their oncology wards every afternoon to optimise a new schedule. Would the headline on RTE read, there's been criticism in Dublin 8 regarding a change in ward hours? Of course it wouldn't. It would be a national emergency. It would be framed as a crisis in healthcare or a blow to patient safety. The language would be urgent. We've seen this before, but when it happens to us, when cancer patients in Donegal lose the only viable way to get home after a grueling treatment without an 8-hour round trip on a bus, it's framed as a logistical tweak to a public service obligation. So by labelling it as a criticism in the Northwest, the broadcaster turns a national failure of care into a local grievance. So this isn't just about planes. It's about the insulation of the capital by using the passive voice. There's been criticism. So the Nationals often avoid saying who's being hurt and who's doing the hurting. They aren't reporting on a lifeline being cut. They're reporting on a contract being signed. For a national broadcaster or any national broadcaster, this language serves as a buffer. It tells the rest of Ireland who they're speaking to that this is a Donegal issue, a regional scheduling quirk, rather than what it actually is, the state actively making it harder for sick people here to survive. We aren't criticising a schedule. We are fighting for the basic right to access healthcare without being punished by our geography. It's time the language used, I think, by our national media reflected that reality. And there's a second layer to this, one that's even more exhausting, and that's this tired narrative in Dublin that Donegal's always complaining. But let's be very clear, we aren't a county of professional protesters. We don't enjoy being the angry voice on the airwaves or the headlines in the paper. We're forced into this position when the likes of RTE use that detached clinical language. They frame our struggle as some sort of a choice, as if we've just decided to be unhappy with a new flight schedule. They don't acknowledge that we're reaching or reacting to a series of subtractions. They take away the rail years ago. People feel they neglect our roads, and now they're compromising the link that cancer patients rely on to get through their darkest days. If you are constantly fought to fight for the bare minimum, then you eventually get labelled as combative, which we are. But we aren't complaining for the sake of it. We are screaming because the baseline of public service is being moved further and further from us here in the Northwest. If the government and some national media want us to stop complaining, well, they should give us reasons to fight, or to stop giving us reasons to have to fight for our lives. Language matters. It's not just us that hears it. It's the entire country. And on the issue of journalism, in the Sun, a rise in AI threatens the financial viability of quality journalism, it's been claimed. News Brands Ireland issued the stark warning in the Joint Oireachtas Committee. Chair of the representative body for Ireland's leading print and digital news publishers, Sammy Burke, appeared in front of the committee alongside Vice Chair Deirdre Veldon. They fear AI will make journalism, presumably mostly print journalism, non-viable. And so it was posted on social media. I and others have been discussing a long-term issue that's been properly or hasn't been properly addressed. There's no reliable local public transport link from Milford through Cranford, Carrigart, Dannings and Glen to Letterkenny. There are major tourist areas, yet there are only 2 to 3 buses a day, with the last one leaving around 3 p.m. This makes it impossible for people to travel to Letterkenny in the evening, even for something as normal as meeting friends for dinner. Why are we being excluded from the same level of service that other areas enjoy? Councillor Declan Meehan tagged in this. Good morning to you, Declan.
Good morning, Greg.
Is this a concern you've heard before, a concern you share?
It's a concern I hear constantly. It was a big issue on the doors during the election in 2024. And it is an issue and a concern that I share as well, absolutely. And I think that, you know, what highlights this issue for people living from Milford, Cranford, Carrigart, Downings and Glen is that we have such an excellent local link service on the Fannad Peninsula, going from Fannad through Port Salin, Carrickeel, Remelton and into Letterkenny. And that service is available. There's 18 services on that daily, 9 in each direction, with an additional late night one on Fridays and Saturdays. So the current service provision on the Downing to Letterkenny route, is obviously pales in comparison. And this is something, I suppose, that I've been working on with both Patrick Gallagher Travel, Local Link, and also I met with the Minister for Rural Transport, Jerry Buttimer, on this issue when he was on a visit to Donegal last July. And there seems to currently be no way forward on it, which is very frustrating for people because currently, they have less than a quarter of the services available to them than people on the Fannad Peninsula do. And they're also paying more money for their fares. So This is an issue that needs to be addressed.
But it makes a lot of sense too, isn't it? It's quite a natural route. You know, there's not an awful lot of variation off the route. I mean, you could even run it from Creasa to Letterkenny and back, presumably. I mean, obviously, I don't know the ins and outs of all this, but like there is a logical route there that would be well used, I think, later in the evening into the night, potentially.
Yeah, and that's where we get into a lot of the complexities around bus routes, Greg, because the MTA is responsible for licensing particular bus routes, and the 974 route as it stands from Glen into Downings, Carrigart, Cranford, onto Milford and Letterkenny is a licensed route which Patrick Gallagher Travel have the license for. And deviations in that route have to be applied for. If there's any additions to it, the timetabling, etc. It's a complex enough process. And while there is an existing provider, as there is currently, on that route, Local Link cannot come in onto that route to provide, a subsidiary service to it. Now, what we have tried to do, and I suppose along with Patrick Gallagher Travel, is to try and get additional funding or a subsidy, a financial subsidy from NTA via Local Link in order for Patrick Gallagher Travel to be able to run additional services to improve the number of services on that Downings route to Letterkenny.
Is there precedent for that whereby a private operator would be subsidised by Local Link? I mean, is there that level of, can there be that kind of crossover? Does that happen elsewhere?
Apparently not. There is legislation actually to prevent it.
I was thinking.
So that's kind of the crux of the issue. There's been kind of talks about, could that legislation be changed in order to allow for this? Or is it the case where Local Link could take over that route with Patrick Gallagher as contractors on it? So they're the kind of options.
But Local Link don't subcontract, though, do they?
Well, they provide the route, and a provider tenders to actually run that route. But the issue is at the minute that both Local Link and the NTA have said there's no funding in either of those cases available to increase any service provision on the route, which is just, it's a really difficult issue because, you have real stark inequality between someone living in Downings and someone living in Fannet when it comes to accessing public transport in and out to Letterkenny, both in terms of the number of services on a daily basis and also in terms of fares. And the other thing as well is, we have a huge amount of students who are attending ATU, for example, or the ETB College in Letterkenny. They can't afford to live in Letterkenny. Commuting is, a necessary part of now of their student experience. We also have a number of workers. We're trying to reduce car dependency. We're trying to get people to use public transport more. Also, the successful route from Fannet to Letterkenny has really, really positively impacted on the nighttime economy. And you have businesses in Letterkenny, Remelton, Rathmullen and Carrickeel in particular that are all benefiting from these late evening and late night services at the weekend.
Okay, so what's the upshot here then? Where are we at?
Well, look, at what, as far as I'm concerned, as someone who's been working on this for the past year and a half or so, we have to keep the pressure on and to ensure that Local Link and NTA make funding available, whether that's for a Local Link route to be put in place or whether it's for them to seek for legislation to be changed in order to allow Patrick Gallagher Travel to be subsidised in order to provide more services.
The latter seems incredibly unlikely, legislative change for this route, but I understand that that's an option, so we have to discuss it. All right, Councillor Meehan, thank you. All right, bye-bye. What were you going to say, Declan?
Oh, yeah, sorry. It is an unlikely option, and I think that if we are to look at the more likely option of Local Link taking over that route with Patrick Gallagher Travel as a provider on it, what we need to do then is to fight for the funding for that to be in place and also for an allowance to be given to the existing provider to have first dibs on that route for a period of time.
That also doesn't sound like it aligns with the tendering process, but I understand where you're coming from.
That's actually on the table, according to Local Link.
Right, thank you very much for that, Councillor Declan Meehan there. Well, the other player in this, of course, or one of the other players, is Patrick Gallagher Travel. Patricia Gallagher joins us now. And Patricia obviously is an experienced provider on this route. You know the demand that's there and the potential.
Good morning, Greg. Yes, we see it day in, day out. We know that our service is lacking. It's lacking across all time scales from early morning to late evening. We have been fighting hard since 2003. We have been in talks with the NTA. We've had several meetings. We have went as far as drawing up a new timetable. We were hoping to get funding or get assistance to run 10 services every day, which would be doubling the amount of services that we are currently running, and then on a Friday night and Saturday night to include late night services. We can see this all ourselves. We're hearing it daily on the bus. We want to provide the best possible service that we can. But we are a commercial business. There are several other operators operating the same services or similar services as ourselves out of Letterkenny. And unfortunately, we receive no funding from government to help keep the service better the service.
It's completely commercial. Okay. So what happened then last October? Because it seemed you were going to get this really, you know, excellent timetable by the sounds of things over the line. But has there been a setback this year?
There has been a huge setback this year. In October last year, we had been in talks and we had come up with the NTA. We're going to introduce a new scheme and we were going to be one of the first operators in Ireland to try out the new scheme. And we were going to get funding to help with the additional services. The current services would still stand alone, but it would be the additional services we would receive assistance with. So then we almost had everything ready to go, that we were in a position that we could apply for a license. And then the legislation, there was wording in the legislation that wasn't correct and it had to go back to government to have it changed. In the meantime, then, we had another meeting in October and everything seemed very, very positive that this was going to be up and running for May 2026. So we're ready to hit the ground running. But in early January, we requested another meeting with the NTA before we would start the process. It's a very complicated process to make any changes to your licence. So we had a meeting with the NTA on Monday the 26th of January and unfortunately all their funding has been cut in the budget and there's nothing there now for this new scheme for this year.
Okay.
Now what we have been told is that it is not completely off the table, but the wheels are now turning at a very slow pace.
Yeah, you have to be careful too, don't you, that you're not setting out a business plan for an alternative service here, because, you know, this is a route of Patrick Gallagher's travel and you want to maintain that as well. How do you...
Correct.
Yeah, that makes sense, right? Rather than putting out a plan, someone goes, oh, that's fantastic. Let's scrap this contract or not renew it and we'll give it to someone else.
Yes.
So you have to, you want to make sure that you're not disadvantaged by all of this. So what do you see as the options? Councillor Meehan talked about a potential arrangement with Local Link.
Well, we haven't actually been in contact with Local Link. We have been dealing directly with the NTA in all our discussions until now. But now we're sitting down and we're reviewing where we are and where we want to go and what we can do on our own, which isn't a lot on our own at this point. We do need funding. We need assistance, you know. So we're reviewing everything. We're going over all our options at the moment. I seen the post on Facebook on Monday night and I felt it was important to reach out, and we don't want anybody thinking that we take their custom for granted or that we're happy with the service we're operating, because we are not happy with the service. We know that it needs to increase. And we are going over all our options at the moment and we're trying to figure out a route that we can take ourselves, that maybe we could slot in one or two additional services in the day until such times as we get some funding to give us assistance to add on the rest of the services. Like, the service is going very well. Year on year, we're carrying around 40,000 passengers.
On what link is that? 40,000? Is that across the whole network or on this route, Patricia?
That's on this route alone.
Wow, that's a huge figure.
Every year, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. It is a huge figure. Mm. So we want to look after our customers and we want to provide the service that we see the area needs.
Well, you've proven I think you've demonstrated and you demonstrate on a daily basis the need for it. If you, with this limited schedule, like you would want to expand it, if that's the numbers that we're talking here, there's the argument, there's the need for an extended service. A local link doesn't cover this route at the moment, does it?
It doesn't. The only place that we meet animals local link is in Remelton.
So what's to protect you?
For everybody.
What's to protect your company, Patricia, on this route, right? So, because I want to be careful with the language going forward on this, because it's important to get it right. Okay, so whilst people might campaign for a local link service, in inverted commas, have you any protection from sort of state-backed competition, if you know what I mean?
The protection that we have is that the route license is currently on our name as us being a commercial business.
Right.
While the route license is in our name, it prevents anyone else from going in on the license.
Okay.
Now, as I said, we want to double the license. We want to make the service so much more better than it is. We want to give everybody the opportunity to travel from early morning to late at night.
Right.
We're a small business, but we have buses here. We're ready to roll. We have timetables in place of the additional services that we would like to do that will cover all hours of the day. We're ready to roll here, but we just need a wee bit of help.
Okay, interesting. Fantastic insight. Thanks so much for speaking, because all of that information wouldn't be there unless you did come on. So it's very much appreciated. Patricia Gallagher there of Patrick Gallagher Travel. Joe Mangan of Mangan Tours, were in a similar area, but not quite in the same area. Joe Mangan, can you share the obvious frustration there from Patrick Gallagher Travel, that they, you know, they have the equipment, they've got the timetable, they've got the will, they see the demand, they just need the support to provide a more full bus schedule. Joe, how are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. We're good, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. You have a lot of frustration in relation to the service you can provide and to meet the needs of your customers. Talk to us about it.
Well, it's similar, Patricia there and Patrick Gallagher. We're a small family-run business, and we're trying to run the best service we can in the rural area here in Donegal. But we're having huge frustration in that we're getting absolutely no support, no subsidy to provide the service, while we're having to compete with a fully subsidised service that have the idea of Local Link. We totally support to make rural transport affordable and have full timetables is without a doubt a great policy. But it's an awful pity that when they were doing that the small number of commercial bus operators like ourselves, Patrick Gallagher, Mickey Hinds, that they wouldn't include those, because when there was no transport here, you had these small family-run businesses that showed initiative to start these services, ran at losses to try and build these services, invested in vehicles and so on. And now tens of millions a year is pumped into excellent services, but total disregard to whether they are tramping on the likes of ourselves or Patrick Gallagher. Where, for example, in Remelton there with Patrick Gallagher, how do you compete with a subsidised service out of the same town? We had the same thing in Crawley and Gwydor. And effectively, a number of years back, we had to finish up our services there. So we now only start in Minicladdy and Minlara because we weren't able to compete. We lost all our passengers to the subsidised service. And if I was to make a comparison, we've all got local shops, be it in Kerrygart, Downings, Godahark, wherever. Would the government set up multiple local shops that would sell bread, butter, milk at 50 cent because it was the good thing to do to people, and just trample over the others? I think it would be upright that the same level of support wouldn't be offered to the local shops that have been there for years. That's the same thing that we're getting. We're more than happy to increase our services. We would love to have more competitive fares comparable to Local Link. But we're trying to put bread on the table here as a small family business. All we're asking for is please give us a level playing field.
But am I right in saying you guys would be good value for money? You've got the buses, you've got the drivers, you're on the routes. So, you know, presumably any support would not be the same as trying to replace your service with a Local Link service.
100%, Greg. I think the crazy thing about it would be far better value for money for the Exchequer to support existing services like ourselves and Patrick Gallagher. It would be far more economical than providing a full new service if it was that the likes of ourselves was to fail. And I totally understand the frustration of the people. We see it ourselves and we feel the same way that Patricia and I do. We hear it on the bus that it would be great to have more times, more frequency and all the rest, and similar with reduced fares. You know, we're living in a cost of living crisis. Public transport shouldn't be a burden on families. Mm. We see it ourselves now. The young adult scheme
Can I add something to that, if you don't mind, as well? Because we are also being taxed off the roads. We're being taxed out of our cars. We're being taxed out of... we're being effectively just getting a car in the road's a blooming nightmare. And there's a thing that the government used to spin out, and the Green Party in particular, and that was a just transition. And that's to give people proper alternatives to taking the car out of the driveway. This would be what a just transition is, i.e. if someone wanted to socialise or get about, they would be able to do so on a publicly supported transport system. That's a just transition. Now, you can go down to Dublin. There's buses everywhere, trams, Lewis lines, new metros and everything. But up here, we're penalised left, right and centre. And even if we do want to use a bus service, the state has run out of money to try and support the likes of yourselves.
I think even to add further to that, Greg, I would say they've even got the solution for Donegal, and that Localink has been a huge success and has actually addressed that shortfall and that inequality in most areas. The madness of it then is that the few small areas that actually had small family businesses that filled the void, or somewhat started to fill the void before all this money was made available for the Localink initiative, that you decide to penalise those areas and those operators. So the answer is there, the solution is there. And in terms of the money and in terms of the answer that they've given to Patrick Gallagher coaches, I think it's waffle to call a spade a spade. When the money is needed for something, it's there. When the money wants to be used as an excuse, that's what's being rolled out here. And I think it's ridiculous. For what we're talking about here, we're talking about probably, I think, three areas in the whole of the county. I think that you've got the Kerrygart area, you've got ourselves in this area, and then you've got McGeehan Service there coming out of Glencullum Kill. What are we talking here? What are we talking to run? We have, in all other areas, Localink buses running all around us to all hours of the night. We
have it here. See, I think it's a no-brainer, because this is easy, because you guys have the infrastructure in there. You're not starting from scratch. Patrick Gallagher has the roots drawn up. It's just a case of funding. And there is precedent for this, Joe. I think Patricia said that they had come close to some sort of agreement. The government will part fund a public service like yours, a commercial service, and don't see it as sort of taking away from Localink. This can happen, presumably, if you know what I mean.
It can totally happen. If the will is there, we're actually dealing with something that we have a very easy solution. Like Patricia says, they have the timetables and the bus is sitting there. We've similar. It's very easy to fix this problem, and it just isn't a will there. And unfortunately, we've seen Localink has grown to be a phenomenal force in the last 10 to 20 years, not just in Donegal, all over Ireland. The amount of Localink service now is phenomenal. I would be interested to find out what their total budget for the year is. It must be just an astronomical figure. And it's great to see that investment in rural areas to improve this. What it would take to finalise that and include the few commercial operators to actually bring them on board in the same level and say, look, the people of Gotahark, the people of Downings deserve the same right to supported public transport, to supported fares and to better timetables. Let's bring these people along. They're actually knocking on the door wanting to get in. Let's actually let them in and have them around the table and have the solution. It beggars belief. But then again, and being realistic about it, we've seen what the MICA support, we've seen what the flights in Carrickfinn this week. You know, quite often it does beg belief how we're treated here. And while I would love to think that there's an easy answer to this, if I'm totally honest, I don't think there's the will there from government, from authorities in the NTA or whoever, to actually bridge this gap and just cater for all. It's a postcode lottery here at the moment.
Yeah.
Whether you're coming from Godahawk, Downings, Crawley, or Fannad, depends on how much you pay.
Well, listen,
because it's, whether the government supports you or not.
I mean, you and Patricia have made a very, very well articulated argument, actually. And I think it's given the wider public here a greater understanding of exactly what we're talking about. So thank you very much for that. That is Joe Mangan there of Mangan Tours. I'm going to return to the issue of the cancer flights, if I could put it to you like that. Following on, by the way, just to a few of you asking where Deputy Charlie McConnellogue stands on in relation to this. Well, we did invite him on for comment on the programme. He said through his PR guy, Charlie has asked to refer you to his text message response to you on the 12th of December 2024, which reiterated his position in relation to the morning show and explains the reason why he has not participated on the show for the last 3 years, and it's effectively down to me. Right, Pat the Cope Gallagher has accepted our call, though, which is great. Pat the Cope, the decision to sign off on this contract, despite all the concerns from patients, the airport managers, businesses, public representatives like yourselves, are you surprised that the department proceeded as they did?
Well, of course, I met with senior officials from the department last week together with the minister, and I appealed not to sign the contract until such time as there has been wider consultation. But it wasn't a matter for the minister to sign. It's for the Secretary General. And when I got off the plane yesterday morning, I got a call to tell me, possibly out of courtesy, that it was going to be signed yesterday. And I was furious. I rang the Taoiseach. I spoke with him. I spoke with the minister. And they said the decision had been taken, that if they didn't sign the contract and executed yesterday, then there would be a lapse in services from the end of this month. That wasn't good enough for me. I met the minister. I then got a letter from the Secretary General of the department, who signed the contract. And at the end of that letter, when he had outlined what they were going to do and the flights they were going to introduce, they said that they will engage with the airport and seek a weekly report on the first 3 months of the schedule and review its performance and reliability, and then they can know how best to proceed.
But Pat, that doesn't really capture, really, does it? You know, how many people, for instance, are on the inbound flight? I think you described it as a potential phantom flight, and it's not going to catch those people who potentially could miss appointments down there, but also too could find themselves sitting around Dublin for the whole day, sick as a dog. You know, that review doesn't capture what really we're all campaigning about.
I don't understand your question, but
my point is they can review it all they like, but it's not going to capture the inconvenience for patients who can't get back home in a timely fashion. That's the question.
Of course, yeah, and I understand. It doesn't capture the inconvenience, but what it will capture that on the 6:35 flight or 25 flight from Dublin in the morning, and the one returning at 20:30, 8:30 in the evening, that will state very clearly that the flight is a phantom flight and it's not been used. And I believe if that, we can prove that, and we will be able to prove it conclusively, it's not a matter of opinion, it'll be a matter of fact, then they must review this, because there was nobody on those flights. I was thinking this morning that people would be leaving Dublin City at 4:30, and it's a very busy time in Dublin. I checked the Dublin flights last week, and there's 60 flights leaving Dublin Airport. It's between 6 and 7 in the morning. There will be delays, there's no doubt about it. But more importantly, Greg, when the flight is not, when the airport is not located in Carrickfinn, then there's no confidence. Mm. We all know from last night that is coming up this morning. But now, if I have to be in Dublin or others, cancer patients for appointments, they're left in limbo. They won't know until 7:30 in the morning. So it's ludicrous what they've done. And I believe that the tender, the wording of the tender in the journal last year was much too loose. It suggested that there should be a flight going to Donegal or going to Dublin at 8:00 in the morning and one returning at 6:30 in the evening. But they made no specific reference to the midday. And that's where the fault lies with the tender documents. And that's what we much hone in now. And of course, those who are responsible for the cancer, booking the cancer patients there in Dublin this morning, the minister said yesterday that they would meet with senior officials. He told me that he would meet with them in 2 weeks' time. But as of now, I've got no confirmation who they're meeting while they're at the airport. But they will be in here and we will be making a case.
OK, Patrick Gallagher, thank you very much. On the issue of the buses, I believe that Patsy Gallagher provides a great service leaving Carrigart every day at 8 a.m, 11 p.m. and 3 p.m. and a return service from 1 at 6. Yep, listen, there's lots of great providers out there. But this is about a service that would service the nighttime economy effectively. So in other words, you could go out in Letterkenny, or perhaps maybe even people might wish to travel from Letterkenny into Milford or into Downings and spend the evening and have a way home. There is no wheelchair-friendly bus service from Milford any day of the week. How is this allowed in this day and age? Another, local link goes to Fanad Lighthouse several times a day and it's for the benefit of tourists only. Why not do the entire peninsula circle of Fanad so the entire community benefit from that route? Lots of you messaging in relation to that, of course. Greg, Pat the Cope Gallagher should resign from Fianna Fáil over the airport issue, as it was him and his government that signed the contract, says a listener there. I wonder why we have so many yes ministers in our county. They don't seem to stand up for the people of Donegal. We really are the forgotten county. But I suppose that they're at the, you know, I mean, Pat the Cope Gallagher was able to ring the Taoiseach. I just don't understand. And it really talks to that, me pontificating a little earlier on. I don't understand why they don't understand that this is about us getting to and from hospital when we're sick. The article you referenced on RTE website about the change in flights was written by the RTE correspondent for the Northwest. And they believe that I have sour grapes. As I said right at the very beginning, I don't know who wrote it, and it's not a criticism. I know that man is a nice guy. I have no sour grapes, by the way. I've had plenty of opportunities and chose to stay here where I am for the time being. So don't worry about that. Secondly, you know, I will advocate for Donegal as long as I have a microphone to do so. And I know when things are framed as if we're up here in the Northwest and we had a little luxury service that was getting us to hospital for treatment. And I'll call that out if I see it. And it's not sour grapes. I really don't care. Why is the government about to sign off on a big pay rise for a top RTE man so that RTE will continue spouting the government narrative? Another, did anyone watch last night's RTE Investigates programme on the use of prisons for those with mental illness? The country really is a failure to its people. I heard an interview in relation to it, and that's a great arm of RTE, the Investigates department. I didn't. I'm hopefully going to catch up on that at some time in the future. Before we get to some of your comments, I want to go straight to Mary Cole, who's manager of the Donegal Cancer Flight Services. Thanks for joining us, Mary. Appreciate your time.
Good morning, Greg.
Now, you weren't able to secure a meeting with the minister responsible or over the department responsible for the reduction in the services to Donegal Airport. You were contacted by the minister's secretary last night to say, or at some point, sorry, there was a meeting. Give us the background, because I've heard you reference a meeting that was due to take place. So talk to me, what was due to happen?
So we were told yesterday, a member of the press had spoken to Minister Dara O'Brien, and he had said that he wasn't in a position to meet us today, but that government officials would meet us to listen to what we had to say and to give us a chance to pass the petitions over to them. So at 8:30 last night, we got a final kick in the teeth when the the minister's secretary rang and said there was actually no ministers going to meet us, or no
officials
going to meet us. So we said to her, but sure, he issued he issued a statement yesterday saying that the officials would meet us. We're booked up. We're going to be there. And what she had said was that the minister had said that he would rather wait and meet us with the officials as a unit a couple of weeks down the line.
Mm.
Greg, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. He cannot say one thing and then, without any notice at all, at 8:30 last night, given that this is the first time that we have heard from the minister's office was yesterday, after all the calls we put through, after all the emails, this was the first time that we had heard from the minister's secretary.
Mm.
And we told her at that stage, we are going to Leinster House. We are going to be at the gates at 12 o'clock and we expect to be seen by these officials.
And you will be turning up?
We're here. We're actually in Dublin. Yes, we're here. We had all booked to come. There's five committee members and a patient voice all together here. And yes, we're going, and we hope we will be met by our own TDs in Donegal. And we hope to still see these officials and get a chance to see what exactly is in this contract with regards to this review. How is that written into the contract? How is this going to work? Because as you said earlier on, I can't see how this is going to work. If they've signed a contract, unless there's a clause there, how is this going to change?
It changes firstly, the way it changes is the minister has to accept that there's a problem here. Now, he doesn't because he said that reviewing this on an ongoing basis, which I tried to explain tried to ask Pat the Colt Gallagher earlier on. That doesn't capture the reality of us accessing health services in Dublin. So a review will just be about how many's on the flight in the morning. Was it on time? How many was on the flight in the evening? Was it on time? It doesn't. There could be tourists, golfers, cancer patients. It doesn't catch any of that. So there is no resolution to this unless the Taoiseach, Dara O'Brien, recognise that there is a problem. And if they do that, then they get their officials together and they get representatives from the airline together and they try and thrash out an agreement. We're being told that no, this is what the service that you're getting. And I heard you being asked this morning on national radio, but so you have a flight in the morning and a flight in the evening. What else do you want effectively?
Yeah. Yeah.
And unfortunately, that is a symptom of the attitude that in some way this is some sort of a luxury. Justify that afternoon flight. That's what you were asked. Justify why you need that afternoon flight. Why the hell should we have to justify it? It's been there for years. It's very well used. And it gives people who are suffering from cancer some sort of a respite from that 8 or 9, 10 hour round trip. So until such time as the minister and the government recognise that this is wrong, we have no chance of a resolution.
And we don't have any chance of a resolution because they are not listening to us. They are not listening to the people on the ground. And he has made that quite clear that if we're not important enough to come up and pass over 15,000 signatures from all over Ireland in support of retaining what we had, then I don't know. Probably this morning when we were in the airport, we met the chairman, Gary Martin, of Donegal Airport. And we also met Adele Shovlin, the acting CEO of Irish Cancer Society. And their words was, we're only starting. We're only starting now. And together we have to fight this, Greg, because the people that are in Dublin do not realise the importance of these flights. And when we talk about cancer patients, I heard one of the ladies that spoke on the radio yesterday, and she said, if you walked in our shoes and you were going through what we have to go through, and you had to sit in an airport for 8 to 10 hours waiting for a flight home, you would think differently about this.
I want to
There's no compassion in these people.
No, but I want to just something I mentioned earlier on. I want to change the scenario. So imagine this is St James Hospital or Beaumont in Dublin announcing they were closing their oncology wards every afternoon to optimise a new schedule. The headlines wouldn't read, there's been criticism in Dublin 8 regarding a change in ward hours. It would be a national emergency. National journalists would be down outside the hospital. And that's very close to what we're battling for here. Mary, we'll keep updated with you throughout the day to see if anyone has the good grace to at least come out and recognise the voices of the 15,000 people that you have in your hands, but also the rest of the county who are aghast at this decision. Thank you for now.
Thank you very much, Greg. Thank you.
Thank you. Arnie, are you there?
Hi, Greg. Hi.
Hey, Arnie. Nice to chat to you. You're in Dunfanaghy, and, you know, this airport and the use of this airport, of course, we're focusing at the moment on the health side of things, and I'm sure you can relate to that as well. But actually, just as a connection into and out of the Northwest, what's your experience and your view?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been using Dublin Airport for a number of years now to travel back and forth to the US. I found that I've been waiting a number of months now to book flights in March. Nothing's been available. I would usually travel from Donegal down to Dublin and onwards to the US. The removal of the afternoon flight, I think, effectively makes this route unworkable for international travel. Many return flights from the US arrive into Dublin mid-morning, and I don't think any passenger would reasonably want to wait until the evening for a connecting flight back to Donegal. I think the change just removes the practicality of international travel via Dublin for Donegal passengers, and it just significantly reduces connectivity to the region.
Do you know what? I'm going to leave it there, Arnie, because it's an excellent point made very succinctly and other people want to get in on this as well. Thank you so very much.
No problem.
Well
done.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye. Why won't Charlie McConnell go on the show? Please let us know, as this is going on for years and his ridiculous behaviour from a TD. He believes that I'm anti-government and too opinionated and matters like that, but it's fine. It's his opinion. Right, let's continue with our coverage now of the severe reduction, some would say elimination, of the cancer flight services with Deputy Pearse Doherty, who's Sinn Féin spokesperson on finance. Thank you, Pearse.
Thank you, Greg, for having us.
Right, just chatting to Mary Coyle there, I presume you've learned that she's now been informed that even officials from the Minister's department are not available to meet them. They're going to turn up at 12 in any case. This contract has been signed now. It's going to be reviewed. It looks like the government is not for turning.
Yeah, and Greg, there's so much in that, really, to tell you the truth. And, you know, just this morning and yesterday when I heard the news, I'm absolutely furious. Furious for so many reasons. Furious, as you mentioned, that the service, which is availed up by tens of thousands of people, but particularly some of our most vulnerable, the fact that 10% of those patients that travel, over 4,000 people, are medically vulnerable, are going for appointments or have cancer or life-limiting conditions, the fact that they are, you know, are now under serious pressure in terms of whether they can get to Dublin, whether they'll be able to get their treatment, is absolutely scandalous. But also the fact that the government decided to sign this contract without giving due respect to the local community charity who was travelling to Donegal, you know, all the way up, taking time out of their own lives to come and represent those 500 cancer patients that at any given time are using this service, and representing, you know, the 15,000 people who in the last number of days put their pen to paper and signed that petition demanding that the services would remain intact. I have no doubt in my head that the government recognised that this campaign was going from strength to strength, that it was gaining serious momentum. We've seen Magella on the Late Late Show, and she absolutely represented the views of people at Donegal just right down to a T, and I need to commend her. We've seen all of the different groups, the different associations. You know, if there was one way to pull Donegal together, this was it. And the momentum was growing, and instead of actually allowing for that meeting, allowing to listen to the people and concerns of people at Donegal, what the government just basically did is let's sign it before they even get here. Worse than that, Greg, is, as you said, the group then had to learn from the media that the minister wouldn't meet them, that officials were to meet them And then yesterday learned that no, there's no officials even going to meet them. And that's despite I spoke to the minister yesterday. I told him he made the absolutely wrong decision. I spoke to him very briefly and I told him that, you know, you need to let the group know they're travelling, who's meeting them. And he made it clear that the officials were there to meet them today, but that has now been pulled as well. We're working to try and see if that can be changed. But like this, you know, this is just absolutely a slap in the face. It just ties it up.
So, yeah, but why is it so hard to resolve? Because we've got precedent, we've got the service that was there, we've got the 18 odd million to fund it, we've got an airline, we've got two airports, you know, so all the pieces are there. Why the refusal to at least hear the arguments as to why the county is just looking for a continuance of access to healthcare in a timely fashion? Do you know what I mean? It's not like we're battling for funding. It's not like we're battling
100%.
For...
But you're asking the wrong person, Greg. And I'll tell you this, and I say this hand in heart. If our party were in government, this would not happen. And I know that because I know that people in my party would listen and make sure that this wouldn't happen. This is just crazy. Crazy what is happening. I've written to the chair of the PAC now asking them to start looking into this here. We are going to have phantom flights going from Dublin to Donegal. 6:30 in the morning. You're going to have to be in Dublin Airport around 5 o'clock in the morning to get down to Donegal. There is no demand for that flight. Yet the public purse is going to subsidise a flight of that nature. There's no demand also to go up at 8:30, or there'll be very, very little demand to go up at 8:30 because anybody who's going up there will have to get accommodation in Dublin. What worked and what worked for 20 years was a morning flight and late return and a midday flight. That's why, you know, and like I've seen what the government are saying, I've seen what the spin that they're putting out on this year. Why are people excited about this year? We've enough things going on in our own lives. There's enough problems in the world without creating problems. This is not a problem we've created. This is a problem that the government have created. And I completely agree with Donegal Airport in the statement. And it's a very hard-hitting statement that they put out yesterday when they said that they're looking at legal advice. But the department, the government knew about this since October of last year. They knew that our midday flights were going to be cancelled. That was the time to act. At that time, what should have happened is the government should have said, no, we're not accepting this. If the airline don't agree to put on a midday flight, we're going back out with a tender and we're going to stipulate that there has to be a midday flight. They didn't do that. They left it to the last minute. They didn't even tell the airline. The airline found out by chance in mid-January. And then the politicians, as I discussed with you last
week.
And
that by chance is overhearing staff with the airline having a chat.
Oh, yeah, what disrespect. Like, you know, I've seen it on social media there, and just people generically putting up posters and posts and all that. And we talk about the forgotten county. Like, you know, how could you not have that label? Like, this is a government that not only made a major mistake, has taken away a service. And I was trying to explain to people, some people who were asking me about this, I goes, like, this is absolutely crucial for cancer patients. It's a complete lifeline.
But the problem we have is, and I said this earlier on, we are treating these issues as a regional issue. This is a national issue. This, I mean, if you look at the framing of it on RTE, this is about there are complaints in the Northwest. It instantly isolates it as if it's another thing that's being moaned about in the Northwest. As I said earlier on, if there were significant changes to a cancer ward in Dublin, it would not be seen as a Dublin 8 problem. It would be seen as a national health crisis. And this is why we constantly find ourselves battling for this type of stuff. Do you believe there is a resolution?
The resolution has become 100 times harder because the government signed a contract. Now, we need this meeting today because we need information. I've now requested the contract, whether I'll get it or not. I've put in a freedom of information request in relation to this here. The government are talking about this review clause. I think that's bull, to tell you the God's honest truth, but we want to tease that out with them. I think this is about spin. I think this is about trying to save face. You know, I don't know if there's a legal avenue here.
If people decide to use that flight and then sit around in Dublin, right, waiting to get home after treatment, and they don't get that very late evening flight, that review doesn't capture the impact that has on them. It doesn't capture the potential impact it might have on their outcomes. It doesn't capture those who choose not to fly for treatment and roll the dice. It's just a seat counting exercise.
Well, It's worse than that, Greg, because like this is what they're saying. Ah, you can come back in the evening and all the rest. No matter, like, they don't know how sick these people are. Like, the group that are travelling up that the government have completely disrespected, like, they travel and support some of our patients who are so sick and may not have family support. Like, these are angels in our county who do this. It is unbelievable. And there's a huge nest of volunteers that support people as well in relation to this. But Greg, it's even worse than that. It's not about just getting a later flight. The issue here is the flight isn't going to be available. Like, 53 people the day before yesterday, I don't know what went up yesterday, but the 53 people went up on that flight in the middle of the day. How are they going to get... They're not going to get on another flight. Like, the only flight that they can get then is the morning flight. But the morning flight's nearly full. So, like, there is an issue of capacity here. So what's going to happen is that these people will not be able to go up in the midday. They will then have to go up at 8:30 at night, flying up to Dublin, landing in at 9:30. And they're going to have to book accommodation and hotels overnight. And if you're sick, if you're a cancer patient, that's what takes it out of you. If you're not a cancer patient, because we're focused on cancer patient here, and rightly so, because they are obviously the most vulnerable. But there's over 40,000 people who use this airline. And like so many people now, it is not going to suit them, whether they're traveling up for business, for college, whether they're doing connecting flights. And this is symptomatic of Donegal. The only reason we have a PSO, the only reason we can get a PSO is because we are so peripheral, because we have no rail, we have no motorway. It is, we have to prove to the European Union that we are so disadvantaged that it is okay to actually subsidise these flights. And now subsidising flights with taxpayers' money, with our money, where the demand is not there, it is just, it's infuriating. So where does it go from here? We need the meeting. We need the meeting also with the minister, but the meeting is only going to be just to give us information. We need to see the contract. I would like to see what Donegal Airport are looking at.
The thing with the meeting, the important thing with the meeting is that you get to argue, and this is why, and it doesn't matter whom it's with, you get to articulate why a decision is wrong. And that means that the person who ultimately is responsible has to articulate back to you as to why it happened, and it gets it on the record. And that's why meetings are so important. Piers, thank you very much for your time. That is Sinn Féin Deputy Piers Doherty. And listen, there's cross-party opposition to this government. We heard from Government Deputy Charlie McConnell. This isn't government bashing. Piers can have his views. This is about Donegal losing vital services, and everyone seems to be pulling on that same jersey. OK, Paul Wallace is going to join me very shortly. But first, I want to go, I must go to Sharon. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Greg.
Thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for helping us get the story out there. I know speaking publicly is not for everyone, or radio is not for everyone, but it's such a critical issue. It's really important to get as many voices as we can. So just in your own words and in your own time, can you explain why the flight to Dublin is so important for your family?
Well, my wee boy, John, was diagnosed in 2021 with a condition called Shwachman-Diamond syndrome. Very rare condition, and it kind of popped up. He was always kind of sick from birth, but it was a bit of a shock when we found out it is life-limiting. So he has had yearly bone marrow biopsies, and he has to have bloods done every 3 months, and he's under several doctors in Temple Street. His day can consist of lots of blood tests, scans, lots of hoking and poking by doctors. His haematology team are fantastic. They get us in and out as quick as possible so that he can be back on the afternoon flight, because they think it's amazing that we can do this. He's quite tired when he's finished, and the thought of sitting in an airport till 10 to 7 in the evening is just, it's just crazy. When you can be back down and have him back in his bed or back on the couch by 3 o'clock.
And just to be clear, the hospital works with you understanding where he's travelling from and having to get back home, because they also understand the strain and stress it would be putting on him. And you as a family, of course, in trying to drive back or what have you. So the hospital understands.
The hospital, many a time I go in and they're like, oh my God, you've come from Donegal, you must, what a journey. And I'm like, I actually made it here in 50 minutes. And they're looking at me like, how is that possible? Yeah. And I explain then about the flights. I say how important they are. And now they just know when we come in, and he meets up with the haematology team, and they walk us through every appointment he's got that day, and they're so good, and It's day and night. It's day and night to be able to come home early rather than having a full day in Dublin. He's only 11. Like, he's just, like last November, he had, his condition consists of bone marrow problems, bone marrow failure, and he has skeletal issues, enzyme issues. There's loads of wee issues. Now, have you seen him? There's, you know, he's a great wee man. But just last November, he had the third operation on his hip where he had a plate and six screws placed in the hip. So he's back walking, he's back playing football, he's back on his feet.
He's a battler, isn't he?
But he's a great wee man. Yeah. But he's a lot of issues. He's a lot of things to deal with. And the fact that we have to travel to Dublin, even to get his blood tests done, you know, I can't explain to you what those flights are like.
No, you've done it. It really, really is coming across loud and clear, Sharon. And not wishing to labour the point, but I think just it's important. Say, for instance, you as a family have to travel down the night before and stay over and then head to Temple Street and then drive back, or indeed leave at the crack of dawn in the car or on the bus, get to Temple Street, get the treatment, then get in the car or on the bus and back again. Do you worry what kind of an impact that might have on him?
Well, like, getting a hotel in Dublin, I know the Belvedere is the closest one we can get to Temple Street. You're talking for two people for one night. It's €200. Simple as that. Like, it's €200. And that's not, like, that's you getting up in the morning, heading away into the hospital, you know, early. You're not even, you're in the bed a few hours. I know sometimes we've had to, you know, if the flight has been cancelled, we've had to bus it back to Donegal. And, like, you wouldn't just, the bus journey is just horrendous. Like,
it is, yeah, okay.
Because we're in Dunlow. So, you know, you're not even in Letterkenny. You're still another hour for when the bus drops you off in Letterkenny till you have to come home. So it's 10 minutes from here to the airport. That's the difference.
Sharon, you did fantastic. All our love and best wishes to you and your son, John. As I say, he sounds like a right little soldier battling away there. And we're going to keep at it and try and retain.
And Mary Coyle and the whole team in Gidor they're
angels, aren't they? Yeah.
The whole lot of them.
Yeah,
they are. They're just angels. And only poor Mary Coyle, I don't know where we would be honest with you.
Yeah,
I think she should be up there, not some of the politicians who's up there.
Well, they won't meet her. Anyway. That's the thing. They won't meet her. Crazy. All right, Sharon, thank you. Paul, are you there?
I am, yeah.
Sorry for holding you, Paul. You have the patience of a saint. And you do fantastic work, too, with your spare time in that you drive for cancer services. You have a great insight into, you know, what the implications of this are.
Well, I've used it, Greg, as you know, when I was in my previous employment, working and for leisure and for health. But in the last while, I've been involved with Mary Coyle and her team there and at Neve Padraic in Door. And, you know, people there are talking about reviews and all of that. A review is meaningless. All a review is something to get you to go away. The numbers are there. The numbers used in the flights have been increasing steadily since 2023, up 13%, 2024, plus 21%, and up again in 2025. And, you know, like when we're involved, and I'm only one part of the team that does the on-land transfers to the different hospitals in Dublin and Galway, Belfast, Ballykerry, places like that, Greg, of people who have cancer and who have been diagnosed. And when you're sitting in the car and you look into their eyes and you see the fear, the anguish, the anxiousness and all of that while they're going for their treatment, not to mind the pain and discomfort then. And then our government come up with this sort of agreement between the airlines. And, like, you talk about review, what needs to be done here is the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste need to get involved. If it was an EU directive or a UN directive, they'd be all over it. It's very disingenuous in them that they won't meet with the four government or Donegal TDs that are up there and trash this out, because otherwise there's no way of dealing with this. It's ludicrous when you think of the timelines involved. Leaving Donegal at night at 8:30, getting probably into Dublin about 9:20, out of the airport 10:00 at night, go to a good local Donegal hotel up there, the Bonington, with Martin McGettigan. You'd be there at 10:30. Who would do that? Like, there's no logic in that. Your caller from Dunfanaghy very well articulated the connectivity issue. That's not going to work. You need that midday flight for connectivity. You have to have that. And the inverse then, and I think Patrick Cope said about coming to the airport for the 6:30 flight in the morning. You know, anyone who has ever been at the airport between 4:00 and 8:00 or 7 a.m. in the morning is peak times with congestion, traffic and all that. So you're asking travellers to go to Donegal, probably to leave a hotel or accommodation or their home about 3 a.m. To get parked, to get in there, to be in Donegal for 7:30. Like, so that's, you don't need a review to give you the numbers on that. So, you know, in West Donegal, and I know it's been alluded to, they have the thing that saying the light in the sky, you know, you have a saying what goes up must come down. But for us, it's for what comes down must go up. And there was always comfort in the aircraft being based in Carrickfinn. And people would watch flight radar, they would watch the sky to see the plane coming in at night. And it gave comfort to people that were going forward for treatment in the morning. People in the islands of Tory and Arranmore, I know of people in Arranmore who would leave the island before dawn in a rib or whatever to get out, get to Carrickfinn, had to go to Dublin. Like, these things aren't being captured. And for Ken Spratt, with pen to paper, you know, to be a faceless bureaucrat, to sign what he signed yesterday, one of your earlier callers there said, people who have cancer walk in their shoes.
Yeah, okay.
You see what it's like. Paul, and I know from travelling up and down, Greg, you know, even in the full of your health, and I did it for a good while when in my previous employment.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And Pierre Doherty alluded to it there. Even flying up and down, getting the morning flight and back in the evening, it's still hard on the body. Never mind to have to sit on a chair and be feeling nauseous and all of that for 3 or 4 hours.
Maybe no toilet on the bus and all that stuff, the reality of it. Paul, thank you so much. Thanks for holding and thanks for your insight. I really, really do appreciate it. As part of Wellness Wednesday, we speak to Owen Quigg, who recently had a vasectomy procedure, and he's in studio with us now. Hi, Owen.
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
why did you decide to go down this route? And I think more and more people are opting for this.
I know, it's a funny one, because we don't really talk about things like this. It's not something I thought I'd be on the radio talking about.
Yeah.
But for me, I guess it's, look, I have 4 kids at home now, and me and my wife made the conscious decision that she was done anyway, because obviously she's the one that's going to be holding the kids. But for me, it was just a case of, I don't see many people talking about it. And we obviously put a wee funny sketch up on TikTok and Instagram and stuff just to have a bit of a laugh with it. But I did not believe the amount of people that reached out about it and said, oh my God, I've wanted to get this done. I just don't know how to go about it. Mm. It's great to see someone that I kind of know of that's got it done. And the inbox was indeed, it was so many messages.
Was
about
there much
it.
Of a pushback on it though? I mean, you'll always get social media such that people will say stuff anyway. But I'm just curious, as the counterpoints, did they pop up at all?
Not even really as much. It was just more of females tagging their husbands or their partners in the post, putting them under severe pressure. So maybe it wasn't liked by some fellas. But no, it all just started out as a joke and stuff. And, you know, my wife, we've had 4 kids, so she's basically been pregnant for 3 years of her life. And for her to get something the equivalent of the woman getting something like that done, it's major surgery. Yeah. So for us, it was a case of just going up to the hospital. It was a 15-minute procedure and it was so simple.
And was part of the process whereby, you know, it was you taking the decision with your partner to sort of take the responsibility of birth control, so to speak? Because the alternative would be, presumably, you know, I'm not getting into your wife's private business, but you know, that take a pill or something along those lines, right? So this is the fella saying, well, no, this is what our decision is, and I'll get the procedure done.
Absolutely. Like I said, look, she's been pregnant for probably 3 years of her life with our 4 kids, and it's the least I could have done, you know, 10-15 minute procedure. And again, the likes of, you know, you're saying there, the contraceptives, the pills and stuff, they're clinically they're not great with female hormones and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, it's the least I could have done. Do you know what I mean? For what she's done for me.
How big a deal is it in terms of the procedure?
It's literally absolutely nothing. It was general anaesthetic, so I was awake for the whole thing. It was just a bit of numbing, so there was a tiny prick, and that was it.
Well, that's
no
too
pun,
much,
no
that's
pun
too
intended.
Much information. And let's stick to the operation. Go ahead.
And basically, you know, it was in 10 minutes. I never felt a thing. And even afterwards, a couple of days, it was grand. Bit of discomfort, bit of swelling for a couple of days. But again, I was back to normal life and playing football after a week.
It's done in numerous places. It's not just a hospital, is it?
No, well, I got mine done in Omaha Hospital, yeah. Which they didn't do it in Derry for some whatever reason. But yeah, like it's, you literally, you're in and out within a couple of hours. And the procedure, again, is 15 minutes and it's not that big of a deal.
Was there any emotional hangover from it?
Absolutely not. Yeah. I mean, like, I've got two boys, two girls. I've got a beautiful wife and beautiful children. And it was just the stage of our life where, you know, that was it. Yeah. And again, it's my wife who has to carry the children. So, you know, she's given me a lot and it's the least I could do.
Yeah, and I know you're really cool with it. I'm just curious if there was any fellas that subsequently then might feel less of a man in inverted commas.
I don't know. I can only sort of talk from my perspective. I certainly didn't. But again, yeah, some people could feel that way, but for me, honestly, there's no absolute change in anything in my lifestyle now. And think in terms like, you know, with us and stuff, there's absolutely no change, so it doesn't really feel any different.
Yeah, and I mean, obvious questions are, functionally, yeah, everything is the same, mm-hmm, except the sperm, which would cause pregnancy, comes out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But functionally, everything else is
the exact same.
Yeah, okay. And you weren't knocked out, you weren't nothing. Did they talk about reversing it?
Well, they give you the option to say, look, that it's not reversible, and like, if you did want to get it reversed, it might not ever happen. But like, I mean, for us, I think that we were done, so there wasn't really much chatting about that for me. But yeah, I do believe that it is reversible, but it has to be in within a certain period of time. Again, I didn't really read up too much of it because we had already made our decision,
and
that
you've
was
got
it.
Your two boys and two girls.
Two boys and two girls. I'm very, very blessed.
Yeah, and it does feel like not a great weight to lift considering what your partner has gone through.
Do you know what? Absolutely not. For me, it was, I just jumped at the opportunity to give a wee bit back. But like, I mean, now sort of our youngest boy is going into nursery in September and he's off his nappy. So every wee last sort of thing that he completes is another milestone that we'll never get again.
Yeah.
And that is a wee bit sad to a certain extent. But again, look, we've had four kids and we just posted the video for a bit of crack, but the feedback's been great. And if I can help one fellow who might feel a bit more comfortable seeing the comedic side of it on social media and, you know, letting them know that it's not that big of a deal, yeah, because there is a stigma about it, you know, feeling less of a man, or maybe it's painful, you know, we all get one in that area with a football or something, it is painful, but again, look,
it's the big cross legs thing, isn't
honestly,
it?
Honestly, it's absolutely nothing, and again, you know, for what my wife has given to me, it's the least I could do, you know, 10, 15 minutes, and
yeah,
that's
for
us.
Sure. And I think it'll dispel a lot of myths, but why are you speaking publicly on it, if you know what I mean? Because you're getting that feedback on your socials and then you go, well, maybe there's something here for me to talk about, right? Is it because you've got the impression that a lot of lads were considering it, or it maybe was an option that a lot of couples didn't think was on the table?
Yeah.
Or like, what kind of has come from the public speaking?
Well, there was no real plans to talk about it. But again, me and my wife would post relatable content on social media for people that are in around our age, and we just thought it would be really funny to just post a silly video. It was literally a 15-second clip of me walking in with a smile, me walking out with a smile, and then at the end of the night eating a bit of ice cream because I felt a bit groggy and sore. Yeah. And again, it's just our type of followers would be parents and would be at the similar situation in our life that they would be. So for us, it was kind of, we just thought it would be funny and relatable, and we just couldn't believe the amount of people that actually had tagged. A lot of the men got tagged, you know, it's your turn now, it's not as bad, stop whining. And people sharing their stories that my husband's been on the list for a year now, he's up next month and he's quite scared, any advice? Just silly things that could put people's peace of mind, you know.
It's interesting you talk about how the youngest going through the milestones. I think I had that myself as well too, and in a way you lock in the memories a bit more as well too, don't you? You go, you know, you're more present. I think you're more present because, you know, right, okay, this is my last time to sort of 100% lock in some of these experiences.
I mean, he goes to nursery now in September, so we still have him at home. So again, we are now prioritising the time with him, because once September comes, he'll go off and they're all at school then, so we will have more free time. So this is the last one, so we are soaking up every wee sort of opportunity that we can get with him.
Separately for you, obviously people know you from X Factor.
Yes.
I mean, obviously for the last while you and your partner have been focusing on family and,
yes,
and working on the socials and other stuff you're involved in doing as well. How's the creative side of your life going?
It's brilliant. I mean, I always say now, like, I've probably not as busy as the X Factor year, but as busy as years up after that. I mean, since COVID, I think I had all my eggs were in music, and obviously when that all sort of stopped, I realised, right, I gotta be jumping into different avenues and stuff. So now we're doing more presenting, we're doing more MCing, especially in around the north and stuff, and around Belfast and Derry. And yeah, we do some kind of social media stuff, work with brands. I don't really like the term influencer. Content creation is sort of more what
I think that's what other people describe it as, I guess.
Yeah.
In a way, Owen, with everything that you've managed to have in your life, I would say you've no regrets. When you see the other end of fame, this is, you're very much more in control of it, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, so you actually have a life, but you can balancing out with, you know, making an income, being in the public eye as much or as little as you like, banging out your own track if you wish. You don't have to worry about record labels or contracts. You know, sometimes you see these ultra celebrities, if you get where I'm coming from. And I wouldn't be envious of that existence at all. It kind of sounds to me like you've struck the jackpot in the balance between, you know, clearly, you know, we want to being out there and a performer, but also just having something of a normal life as well.
You couldn't have put it any better. That is exactly where I've sort of always wanted to be. When I did audition for X Factor, it was never to get famous. It was just to see if I was any good at singing. Luckily, it took off. It was great. But I put it down to, honestly, coming from a very small town where everyone knew me beforehand, and then coming back, everyone still knew me, so it wasn't as difficult to decompress back down to a
wee
bit of
normality.
And you
don't get away with walking around in a shirt up to your belly button and a pair of sunglasses.
Absolutely not. Do you know what I mean? But
right,
do you know what, like you say, still to be involved in music, whether it's not those heights, but the fact that you can still make a living and live a normal dad life. So.
And you're in complete control.
100%.
Yeah, you're not at the whim of a record producer. Listen, thank you so very much. Just if people want to check out the videos and stuff, what's the social handle?
Yeah, it's on TikTok. It's just Owen Quigg, Eoghanquigg.
Listen, thanks so much for
calling. No worries. Thanks for having me.
Stuff. All right. That's where we leave it on the programme for today. Thank you so much for all of your interactions. We'll catch up on those tomorrow morning.